Are you or a loved one in the midst of a cancer diagnosis or bouncing back from your battle? Welcome to Thrive Through Cancer, the podcast that offers hope and healing and shares personal experiences, self-care solutions, health tips, and the support of a community of people just like you. I'm Susan Johnson, a functional nutritional therapy practitioner whose own son was diagnosed with cancer right before his third birthday. My job was to keep people healthy, to help them fight disease. So when my own son was diagnosed with this scary illness, it was so humbling. But rather than becoming a victim, I began researching. I up-leveled my knowledge and my mindset, and I chose to serve others through our own cancer journey. This show is an opportunity to find and share strength through our struggles. You'll hear from health professionals, innovative thinkers, beautiful personalities, and those who have learned to live life to the fullest despite their diagnosis. We'll raise some questions, find some answers, shed a few tears, share more than a few laughs, and give each other the motivation to get through one more day every single day. So join me in this journey and let's learn to thrive through cancer together. This is such a treat. I am so blessed to be able to welcome Dr. David Jockers to the Thrive Through Cancer podcast. You guys are going to absolutely love this conversation, and you will find so much value from what he shares. He is a doctor of natural medicine, and he runs one of the most popular natural health websites. It's drjockers.com. It's gotten over 1 million monthly visitors, and his work has been seen on popular media such as the Dr. Oz Show and even the Hallmark Channel. Dr. Jockers is the author of a couple really great books, and one of them being best-selling book, The Keto Metabolic Breakthrough by Victory Belt Publishing, as well as The Fasting Transformation. He's a world-renowned expert in the area of ketosis, fasting, brain health, inflammation, and functional nutrition. He's also the host of the popular Dr. Jockers Functional Nutrition podcast, and he lives in Canton, Georgia, with his wife, Angel, and his twin boys, David and Joshua, and his daughters, Joyful and Shine. This episode is going to be packed full of education all around fasting, and I cannot wait for you to dive in. Awesome. Well, you guys, I am so thrilled to be here with Dr. David Jockers. And if this is a new name for you, you are going to be just in for it. This gentleman has been somebody that has been played a really integral role without even realizing it in my education journey as a practitioner in supporting families who have children with cancer and adults as well. He's one of the first people that I listened to and took his advice around the idea of fasting. And he speaks a lot about the ketogenic diet. These are both things that you hear me talk a lot about, but I have to give credit to really first learning this idea from Dr. Jockers. And so you are going to be blessed today by this conversation. That was my prayer before we started this, and leave with some really specific tools and hope to thrive through your cancer journey. So Dr. Jockers, thank you so much for giving us your time today. We're so thrilled to have you.
Thank you, Susan. Always great to be on with you. And I really love the work that you're doing here.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So before we get into it, I'd love people to get a little bit of an understanding about you. And I know you are living with your beautiful family in Georgia. I'd love to hear what got you interested in the natural health field. What made you decide to become a doctor of natural medicine?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I really have a pain to purpose story, but originally my inspiration was really my mom. She's a naturopath and she was studying to become a naturopath when I was growing up. And, you know, she used to teach me, like, back then, this is the 90s, early 90s, she was following a macrobiotic diet, which, if you don't know anything about that, it's a very bland diet, very vegetarian, vegan based, low fat. She doesn't teach that anymore, but back then we had lima beans and steamed kale and things like that at meals. And, you know, I'm a 10-year-old child and, like, I do not want to eat this. I want to eat what my friends are eating. And she used to appeal to me because I was an athlete growing up. And also my older brother, he had acne. And so she used to say things like, well, the reason why he has the acne is because he's eating too much sugar. He's eating these chocolate bars. And I was like, oh, I don't want to have acne. So I'll stay away from that. You know, as I got into my teens, it was like, she would say things like, you know, if you eat this, you're going to have more energy. You're going to be able to perform better. And whatever it took to, you know, be a better baseball player, I was interested in that. And so I started eating healthier, thinking, okay, this is going to help me perform. And so this is kind of the way that I started looking at it, was what I eat is going to, it's going to influence my performance in life. And when I got out of high school, I became a personal trainer, you know, a few years after high school, got into, you know, more of a, you know, health and fitness profession. And I thought back then that I had to eat six meals a day. I had to eat 5,000 calories in order to maintain my weight. You know, I was getting most of my information from Men's Health magazine or something along those lines. And I ended up developing irritable bowel syndrome. And, you know, I would have times where I had incredible cramping in my gut, constipation, diarrhea. I ended up losing weight. I ended up developing orthostatic hypotension, where I go from sitting to standing and I would have to hold on to something because I would get super dizzy. My body was just in a panic mode and I had severe leaky gut. And it was around that time that I was actually starting graduate school to become a chiropractor. And somebody turned me on to DrMercola.com, was probably the most well-known natural health influencer. And he was teaching the no grain diet. And I was actually a vegetarian. So I was like fish. I used to eat, it was a lacto pescatarian. So I would eat dairy products and I would eat fish and eggs, but I didn't eat meat. I didn't eat chicken or red meat or anything like that, 'cause I thought it was bad for you. And so I started reading his content and I thought, wow, I'm going to try this out because I'm not feeling good the way that I am now. So I'm going to try this out. I took out grains and went on more of like what we would call, I guess today, like a paleo diet. This is back in 2004, 2005. And I felt significantly better. And I started gaining weight, felt better in the gym. And I was naturally satiated, you know, in the mornings. And I was taking 7 a.m. very, very early classes, 7 a.m. classes. And I wanted to work out before class. And I just didn't really have time to eat and I wasn't hungry. So I would work out, you know, get all my stuff, go to class, and I would bring a whole bunch of water, like a gallon jug of water. And I would just drink this water throughout the entire morning and drink a full gallon. And it kept me from being hungry. And I just wasn't hungry. My brain felt great. I felt really amazing. And I would start, I was eating intuitively. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to wait until I actually feel hungry. I know it's going to come at some point. And it usually came around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I would eat, and I ate a lot. I mean, I was in my early 20s still. So I would eat a lot of food between like 2 or 3 o'clock and let's say maybe cut it off around 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night. And I felt significantly better and I gained my weight back. I felt better than ever in the gym. My performance went through the roof. I went to the top of my class in graduate school. And I just felt the best I've ever felt. And I never heard the term intermittent fasting, and I didn't even know anything about it. I didn't know that I was quote unquote fasting back then. I just was really eating intuitively. And I thought it was actually the water. I thought I would tell people, I'm like, you got to drink a gallon of water before noon. 'Cause I thought it was the water that was cleansing my body, detoxifying me. It was optimizing the contractile strength of my sarcomeres. I was studying exercise physiology at the time, as well as chiropractic. And so I had all these kind of scientific explanations for what was going on. I just knew that, you know, that I had these great benefits, and it was defying what I was learning, because in my exercise physiology class, which is taught by a PhD, she's really intelligent. I'm still good friends with her now. I used to tell her, I'm like, I feel great in the morning working out fasted. Like I don't eat in the morning and I work out and I feel great. And she's like, no. Like you have to have this amount of carbs before your workout, you know, this and that. I'm like, no, I haven't eaten, you know, since 7 o'clock last night, and it's like 12 o'clock, you know, it's like 11 or 12 o'clock the next day. And I'm like, and I don't even feel hungry. And I worked out this morning and I feel great. And she's like, no, you're doing it all wrong. And so we would have kind of these conversations, and I couldn't fully explain it scientifically, but it wasn't until years later, just my curious mind, I started looking through research on different things, and I discovered intermittent fasting. And that's been something I've taught, you know, ever since then. And then when I started my clinic in 2009, it was the economy had crashed. I couldn't get a loan. I couldn't get a business loan. So I actually opened it on credit cards. Somehow, you know, God just made it happen. I got like a home refinance loan. It just, everything lined up and I was able to open my clinic, and I was working around the clock. I was single back then. And, you know, I was really determined to be successful and help a lot of people. And so I would work 6.5 days a week and, 14, 16 hour days. And I was living in my clinic for the first 2 years, you know, until I paid off my student loans and all the debt that I had. And I would shower across the street in a 24 hour gym. And, you know, of course, no water filter. So I was getting chlorinated water on me. I was literally sleeping in the back of my office on a mattress underneath the power panel. So I had electromagnetic stress. I also had a chemical x-ray processor back then. This is before, you know, I was able to afford digital x-ray. And that was in the bathroom that I was using on a regular basis in my back office. And so I was being exposed to these chemicals. And so I started my clinic 2009. In 2011, I developed skin cancer. And my grandfather died from metastatic melanoma. And I grew up in Florida, been sunburnt more than somebody should be back in my early days. And so I had all the risk factors, and I saw it was on my nose, and I was looking at it every day. And I just realized it was kind of a time to take inventory of my life. And I realized I am way out of balance. I'm working way too much. I had this constant fear of failure that I was going to lose it all. So I'm living out of fear every day. I'm exposed to different toxins. So I ended up buying the closest available house to my clinic, like literally walking distance away, shower filters. I hired an associate doctor, did all these things to help create, you know, just some peace and a healthier environment. And I actually did a 5-day fast, 5-day water fast. And I had come across this book, The Metabolic Theory of Cancer by Dr. Thomas Seyfried. And I started reading that book, and he talked about the ketogenic diet and the approach. And it was similar to what I was teaching. We used to call it the cellular healing diet, which was basically a lower carbohydrate diet where we really focused on healthy fats, got rid of the bad fats, got rid of, commercial processed animal foods that are, you know, loaded with chemicals and toxins. And so I started following this, you know, I did this fast. I started following this ketogenic diet. And I was able to get rid of that cancer naturally. Now, I never got an official diagnosis of it, but it was just something that I was observing. And as a doctor, I know enough to know, okay, what's normal, what's not normal when you're looking at, a mole on your face, right? That you can easily see every single day. And so it completely faded away. I mean, I can't even find the scar now. It's on the right side of my nose. But, ever since then, I started teaching ketogenic diet. I started teaching, I got really into functional blood analysis and a lot of other things that have to do with functional medicine, created a lot of content online. And, at this point now, I actually sold my clinic years ago, don't actually see clients anymore, although I do have a health coaching team that does. And now at this point, I just create content and really try to help influence and educate people on natural strategies they can take to take control of their health.
Wow, that is such a powerful story. I was not familiar with your cancer journey and just having that diagnosis. And that's incredible that you had that, again, that start. I always think of it this way too, is for those who may be listening that don't have cancer, maybe they're caring for somebody that does. There is so much that you can do to be proactive. And I wonder for you, Dr. Jockers, if those years of unintentional fasting and taking care of your body prepared you for this time that you had this diagnosis and your body was actually strong enough to really help you fight through it with some of the other natural remedies that you did.
For sure. I had already built up a lot of resilience. I was just very out of balance. And I think ultimately, obviously there's a lot of tragic stories, and I know you deal with a lot of tragic cases, but I think particularly for adults that cancer, really any diagnosis, is really a wake-up call. It's time to take inventory of your life. And when you do that, I think you're gonna end up discovering a lot of things. Like for me, I had a lot of just deep emotional wounds and kind of this fear of failure that I had to really work through. And that was driving my decision. So I was in a sympathetic fight or flight mode all the time because I just constantly thought, I'm gonna fail. I'm gonna, I can't succeed. And I had this kind of low self-esteem that was driving this, I have to perform every moment of every day. I can't rest. And obviously that's not healthy. And that's not sustainable for a healthy lifestyle. And the cancer was actually kind of a wake up and say, hey, you're not going to live the life that I've called you to live if you continue to react and to live out of this sort of life philosophy. And so I need to change my ways.
I love how you say it's a wake up call. I try to teach families that when they receive that diagnosis, I mean, when we did, and our baby's not even three yet, I remember being devastated. I thought at that point in time that cancer meant death and that there wasn't this alternative option. I didn't know cancer. I didn't know this, you know, and now I wish I would have known back then what I know now and what I share with families is just that, that if we looked at cancer as, first of all, it's not the problem. Cancer is not the problem. That's just the label that we get. And if we look at that as an opportunity for healing, this is an opportunity for us to step into a deep healing journey and get to root cause of, like you said, emotion, physical health, all of these things. And I think if we reprogram our mind around that, it does give us a positive outlook on a diagnosis that could otherwise be devastating and hopeless, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's really powerful. I wanted to ask you, when we talk about fasting, you know, I will never forget we were constantly criticized as we walked through our journey, because of course I pushed against the recommendations and we were doing things a little bit differently than what they wanted us to do. And one of the main things being diet, you know, we were refusing all hospital food. We were bringing in our own food, excuse me. And so one of the things that they told us all the time, every single day, and I knew better, thankfully, I was a nutritionist at this point in our journey, but they would say, we are just so terrified that these kids will get cachexia and that we're going to watch them lose weight and the cancer, because of course, chemotherapy destroys the body from the inside out. Mm-hmm. And their biggest fear from a diet nutrition standpoint is cachexia, which we, you know, I can understand that. So my question for you is, and maybe not necessarily right now in regards to children, but let's talk about adults. Mm-hmm. When I bring up fasting, these cancer thrivers are in their mind immediately going, but my doctor has said I can't lose weight. So can you speak to that a little bit? What is, when we talk about fasting and the healing powers, which I do want to get into as well, but right away, I want to push away any fear around this idea of, but if I fast, I'll lose weight.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, and fasting is really ancient medicine. I mean, it's something all of our ancestors did. I consider the most powerful, most inexpensive and ancient form of, you know, really healing strategy that we know. So it's built into our DNA to be able to become basically more resilient and also very thrifty when we go into a time of famine. Our body actually really knows what to do when we go into a time of famine. Now, you may not have had a time of famine throughout the course of your life, so you have to teach and educate your body, but it's built in there. It's in the DNA. That's how our ancestors survived. They didn't have refrigerators and pantries and things like that. And so, you know, if the harvest wasn't good, if the hunt wasn't good, they would go, you know, a full day without eating easily, right? If not multiple days without eating. And this was not uncommon. And the reason why we're here today is because some of our ancestors, they survived. And they became stronger and more resilient. They passed that DNA on to us. And so it's within us. We just have to unlock it. Now, when it comes to cachexia, we do have to be careful. Obviously, there are people that, you know, are wasting away when it comes to cancer. And so those individuals, it's definitely going to be harder. You know, for those individuals, I'm recommending more of like a ketogenic style diet. Really lower in sugar, right? And that's probably the main thing, sugar, bad fats, and chemicals that we're trying to avoid. All right. However, for individuals that do have weight to lose, fasting is a phenomenal strategy. And it really, really helps with reducing cancer growth in your body and making the cancer cells more susceptible to whatever conventional therapy, if you're doing chemotherapy or radiation, or if you're doing natural strategies, natural, quote unquote, natural forms of killing cancer, like IV vitamin C or hyperbaric oxygen, where we know oxygen is toxic to cancer cells because they're anaerobic. Vitamin C acts as basically a cancer killing agent when you take it in high doses in IV. So the chemotherapy and the radiation, as well as the oxygen and the vitamin C, right? They're getting into your body and having kind of a systemic impact. When you fast, it helps them isolate and localize their impact into the cells that are most susceptible because they're not getting the continuous supply of glucose. They're weaker and they're also, in a sense, more greedy to uptake whatever's coming into the bloodstream. And so it really helps target those cancer cells. And research has shown that it significantly reduces side effects that are associated with particularly, you know, the conventional therapies, chemotherapy, radiation. It could be some terrible side effects that people deal with. And fasting, research has shown, can dramatically reduce a lot of those side effects and help people be able to respond, heal, and become more resilient as they are going through these therapies.
That's such good information. I love, yeah, the idea of fasting is nature's operating table. You know, I've always just encouraged people to recognize that. And it's cheap and free. One of my best friends, we actually met because both of our children were diagnosed within a month of each other. We met over the internet on Instagram, which is the many reasons I could be thankful for that platform. And then she was just diagnosed a few years ago with lymphoma. And we've been working really closely together. And the first month of her diagnosis, I lived with her during a 13-day water fast.
Yeah.
And it was so impactful. And she's small, she's my size. And did she lose weight? Absolutely. Granted, she's under medical care. We had a practitioner coming in, we were checking vitals and just being really intentional. Mm-hmm. But watching her go through that, which was hard. Like you said, this isn't innate in us right now. It is passed down and is something that we're capable of, but we have to retrain our body. And so it was difficult. She struggled through that. But what we saw happen as she's continued to thrive through cancer over the last couple of years is she really set her body up with almost like, we kind of looked at it as a restart, right? Just kind of restarting everything. And now she is doing some low dose chemotherapy and we're watching, she's doing fasting 3 days around her chemo. And as you just mentioned, her side effects from chemo are minimal, if any.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fascinating to watch. And so can you speak to some of these benefits and specifically the immune system? Like what happens with our absolute neutrophil count, which is of course one of the main things they're looking at to know if we can continue treatment, if we're doing conventional treatment, measures our ability to fight. How does fasting impact our immune system?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, basically when we're fasting, our body has to get more resourceful. And so we have a lot of bad cells floating around. Those could be immune cells. It could be, I mean, just cells in every single organ system of our body, because we have this key hormone called insulin, and insulin comes out and its job is to take sugar out of the bloodstream and put it into cells. And so it's kind of like a lock and key system. When sugar gets elevated in our bloodstream, the sugar molecules will bind to proteins in our bloodstream and create something called advanced glycation end products, AGEs. These AGEs, they are very destructive in the body. So they create a tremendous amount of oxidative stress that damages the endothelial lining of the blood vessels, that damages our organ systems. This is why people with uncontrolled diabetes, they end up having a lot of different problems, kidney failure, congestive heart failure. They can develop optic neuritis, peripheral neuropathy, because they have an accumulation of these AGEs that are just destroying their bloodstream, almost like shrapnel going through. And so in order to protect against that, insulin comes out to keep the blood sugar stable and also to get the sugar into the cell where it can be used for energy. And we all have kind of this threshold for how much insulin will put our body. Insulin really controls our metabolism, and it tells our body to either store and build if insulin's elevated, or to break down, repair, and heal if insulin is low. And so there's this threshold where, okay, if insulin's just above that threshold, we are building and we are reproducing cells, okay? And we're storing fat, and we're building larger cells. When insulin drops down below that, we're breaking down, we become more catabolic, we start breaking down damaged cells and utilizing the raw materials from those damaged cells or damaged cellular organelles. So within a cell, we have different, almost like organs of the cell. We call, you know, they're different than the heart or the liver or whatever it is that are our organs. But in the cell, the organelles are the mitochondria, the endoplasmic reticulum, the Golgi apparatus, all these things that help create proteins and create energy that are needed for genetic expression and for cellular function. And so these things become damaged. These organelles become damaged from metabolic stress. They have a lot of oxidative stress that damages them, mutates them, almost like rusting, like metal rusting. When we see that in the outside, when a metal's exposed to the elements, or like an apple browning, this is what's happening within the organelles. And normally, the way our body works is we should be going through fluctuations where insulin is elevated above that threshold. We're building, we're storing, and then times where insulin is down low. And now we go into, okay, a repair mode, and we start getting rid of these damaged organelles. Particularly when it comes to cancer, we're thinking about the mitochondria. And so we know that with cancer cells, they have mitochondrial dysfunction, meaning that mitochondria are no longer good at producing energy from what we call aerobic metabolism, or metabolism with oxygen. And that's where we burn fat. And the benefit of aerobic respiration, creating energy there, is we can produce a tremendous amount of cellular energy with a controllable amount of oxidative stress and free radicals. We have another energy system called anaerobic glycolysis. And the benefit of anaerobic glycolysis is where we burn sugar for fuel without the presence of oxygen. That's why it's anaerobic. We think about anaerobic exercise, really high intensity exercise. We don't get enough oxygen. So the benefit there is we can produce energy 100 times faster. So it's very quick energy than if we have oxygen and we go through aerobic glycolysis. However, we produce significantly more oxidative stress, free radicals, and we produce significantly less overall energy, but we can produce it quickly. And so with cancer cells, their mitochondria have morphed, and really all of our cells have damaged and dysfunctional mitochondria that are no longer good at producing energy from aerobic glycolysis. And so they now start creating all their energy from anaerobic glycolysis, and they start creating more oxidative stress, damaging that cell. Normally, we should be able to take the damaged mitochondria, break them down, take the raw materials, and turn them into good, healthy mitochondria within the cells of our body. We call this autophagy, or mitophagy specifically. Autophagy means basically self-eating, where all the cells they're going to undergo this process of breaking down damaged cells and utilizing the debris or the raw materials to create new healthy cellular organelles. When it comes to the mitochondria specifically, we call it mitophagy because, you know, we're doing this self-eating process on the mitochondria themselves. So this should be going on to create more resilience and to get rid of bad cells, get rid of bad cellular organelles, and to upregulate our overall cellular function so our cells can really thrive and become more resilient. Because the more healthy mitochondria you have in a given cell that are able to function at a really high level, the more resilience that cell has. And resilience is really just our ability to adapt and respond to stress. And stress is really just any sort of experience that takes us away from homeostasis. And this is happening all the time for all of us. And so we want to have this great level of resilience. And so this is what's happening with the mitochondria, and this is what's happening in our body. Now, when it comes to white blood cells themselves, we get dysfunctional white blood cells. And so we get white blood cells that are spouting out too much inflammatory cytokines that are, you know, even like think about antibodies, right? It's normal to have a certain amount of antibodies. Like if you test people's thyroid antibodies, everybody's got some antibodies, and that's normal. It's a normal natural process. However, to have elevated antibodies, that's not normal, right? And to have a full-blown autoimmune condition, that's not normal. And that's a process that's associated with a buildup of damaged, dysfunctional white blood cells, or dysfunctional immune cells in general. And so we want to remove those and then really kind of try to teach our body to create newer, healthy, stronger, more stress resilient white blood cells that function better. So when it comes to cancer, autoimmunity, we think of like almost like a hyperactive and imbalanced, discoordinated immune system, right? Whereas with cancer, we think of it as an underactive, dysfunctional immune system. And so it's not responding the way it should, because we really have two ways of getting rid of bad cancer cells, or really three ways. One is just autophagy, which should be happening all the time. We're getting rid of the organelles, kind of getting to the root cause, basically. Autophagy is really getting at the very root cause of these cells, so that way, you know, they don't end up becoming dysfunctional. That's the first strategy. Number two is the cells have a natural suicide switch. We call it apoptosis. And so when they are developing a large amount of abnormal, you know, dysfunctional organelles, there's tremendous amount of damage, there's mutated DNA, normally it should trigger this apoptotic switch, and boom, they die. Okay. And then if those two systems are not working well, then the third system is white blood cells find them, particularly like mast cells, neutrophils, they find them and they basically grab them, gobble them up almost like Pac-Man and destroy them. And so if all three of those systems aren't working, that's when we develop, you know, tumors. And so, especially fast growing tumors. And so with the white blood cells, why are they not, you know, finding these abnormal cancer cells? Well, for a number of reasons, cancer cells can actually create mechanisms that basically hide them from the immune system. And the immune system can also be very, very dysfunctional. And so, so we're trying to get rid of basically with fasting, the bad abnormal cells are not functioning well and create more stress resilient cells, more highly effective neutrophils, mast cells, right? So that way we can hunt down and get rid of that cancer and, or limit its growth, right? And that's really the goal there.
Well, and I think to that is if we're constantly in this state of digestion, because we're eating all day long and our body is focusing on breaking down these foods, digesting, yet there is so much work that still has to be done on the inside with destroying these unhealthy cells. We never give our body time to do that, to rest and reset and recover. And so just from, and this sounds so elementary, but I just think if we looked at it as simple as when you are digesting, your body is focused on digestion. So we can't be focused on as much detoxification and, you know, just destruction of these unhealthy cells. And so when you give your body a break from digestion, it can go to work at breaking this down. And if I'm understanding correctly, correct me if I'm wrong on this, autophagy starts for most healthy people or most people at that 18-hour window of fasting. Is that correct? That once you get into that 18-hour window is when you start to see the
autophagy. It's a really good question. Nobody fully knows, and it's going to be different for each individual depending on how metabolically healthy and metabolically flexible they are. So I use this term metabolic flexibility, and that means your ability to go from burning sugar to burning fat as a fuel source. So when you eat a meal, okay, particularly a meal that let's say has a moderate or higher amount of carbohydrates, your body is going to prioritize utilizing those carbohydrates for energy. As when insulin goes up, which is pretty much almost any meal we consume, even a lower carb meal, we're going to have some level of elevation of insulin. That's normal, natural, not an issue. Should normally come down. We use up, you know, whatever stored sugar we have, whatever sugar's in our bloodstream. Our body has natural balancing, a natural balancing act of keeping that blood sugar stable. But insulin at some point should go down between meals and really should go down under this certain threshold to where we now trigger this autophagy process. The more metabolically healthy you are and the healthier you're eating, the better you are going to be able to, you know, basically the quicker you're going to be able to get into autophagy and fat burning. So when you're in autophagy, you're also burning your own body fat for fuel. And so obviously there's a lot of benefits to that as well. And so when it comes to like the 18-hour mark, I would say that's a good mark for somebody that's metabolically healthy to get a good amount of autophagy. Now, autophagy is always going on, some level of autophagy, but for most people, it's at, you know, a very low level. All right. Now, there's other things that help drive autophagy as well. Exercise actually is a great stimulator of autophagy. So that really helps. In your brain in particular, good sleep, right? So when you're sleeping, your glymphatic system is active, helping shunt out and pull out toxins out of your brain. So that's a really key time for brain detoxification and brain autophagy. And so, but autophagy is going to happen at a much higher level when insulin is down. And the longer that insulin's down, the more autophagy your body is going to go through. And this is why fasting can be so powerful. So for the average individual that's active, healthy, metabolically flexible, 18 hours is a really good mark to get, you know, a good amount of autophagy on a regular basis. So my general recommendations for somebody that wants to just improve their metabolic flexibility and their metabolic health is to do something like a 16 to 18 hour fast, let's say 3 days a week. If you feel great doing it every day, fantastic. If you can do it 2 or 3 days a week, that's wonderful. And if you can push it to, let's say, a 24 hour, close to a 24 hour, like a 22 to 24 hour fast once a week, that is a really great strategy for getting a high level of autophagy on a week to week basis. And I think that's super powerful. Obviously, you know, seasonally, you might do a 3 day fast or a 5 day fast, especially if you have a chronic health condition or autoimmunity, chronic inflammation. If you don't feel great, that can be a great reset and that can drive up autophagy even more. But I also really like having kind of like a weekly schedule, right, that you're following that's going to get you a level of autophagy. Meanwhile, you're still getting the nutrients that you need for your cells to grow, to divide, and to thrive as well. So you got to have a good eating plan built in there as well.
Which is so important and kind of circles back to that first question that we wanted to dispel the fear around cachexia is this is all critical for healing. Fasting is critical for healing. However, what you're eating when you're not fasting is just as important. And that's where we won't get into it in this particular episode. I'd love to welcome you back on in the future to talk about the ketogenic diet. And I know you've written a book about that and fasting, which we're linking to in the show notes, that I think is a really great place for people to start. You've been coined as being the person who is easy to understand from a medical perspective. And so I think that's why your information can be so valuable, because you make it easy to understand. But all that to say, what you're eating when you're not fasting is so important. And a ketogenic diet, that's what we did with my son. We never measured ketones. We weren't really intentional with that, because with the leukemia, blood cancer, it wasn't as important that he stayed in ketosis. But of course, with tumor-based cancers, we know that that can be really, really effective. And Dr. Seyfried talks about that in his book. But yeah, I think it is important that you mentioned that. I appreciate you mentioning the nutrient piece. It's not what you, it's not just calories, right? It is the quality of that and the nutrition that you're getting from the food, so that you aren't losing weight, so that you are not having these insulin spikes, so that you're creating your body to do what it was ultimately created to do, which is to keep the healthy cells healthy, destroy the unhealthy cells. So
yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. And then also from a recurrence perspective,
yes,
you know, somebody, there's good research. I think it was Journal of American Medical Association Oncology, their oncology section. They had a 2016 study that showed they looked at 2,500 women. These are all women that had breast cancer in the past. Okay. So they were, you know, they were said to be cancer-free at the time, and they monitored them and they looked at their nutrition journal, right? So they had these people keep a nutrition journal as far as what they were eating and when they were eating. And they, what they found, they monitored them over a 7-year period of time. And what they found was that the women that fasted for 13 hours or more, basically an overnight fast, let's say they finished dinner at 7 p.m., they didn't eat anything with calories until 8 a.m. the next day, those individuals had a 39% lower risk of having the breast cancer reoccur. And that was the only significant factor they found looking at, you know, these nutrition journals, because they weren't giving nutrition advice. They were just saying, okay, what are these people eating and when are they eating? You know, just looking at it and seeing if they see any sort of differentiating thing. And the biggest thing was women who fasted for 13 hours or more overnight. And again, these weren't people that were educated in intermittent fasting. They were just doing this more intuitively, 39% lower risk of breast cancer recurrence.
Wow. And that's free. It's what anybody can do. That's, I think, one of the most important things. I know that with any type of a diagnosis, it's overwhelming. And then you go to the internet and you find 1,075,000 suggestions and all the supplements and all of the diets. This is the most powerful free method, and 39%. And that's only 13 hours. That should be just a natural thing that we stop eating at dinner and we start eating breakfast. And wow, that, I think that in itself just speaks volumes and should give every single person hope. And I will say this, and if you want to help us close with any other kind of quick hacks, I know as we started fasting, my husband and I, a few years back, those first few, it's so silly because now I just laugh at it. I could go till, 3 p.m. But those first few days, your stomach is grumbling and you think, we were taught to think when your stomach growls, you need to eat. And that's actually just your digestive system being really used to a routine, right? That you've been doing for years. And it's like, okay, I'm creating all of the digestive juices and the enzymes. I'm ready to eat. You're not eating. So I'm not really sure what's going on. And so it does take a little bit of working up to. Do you have any tips you can offer for people who are starting the process to just make it a little bit more comfortable?
Yeah, for sure. I think about fasting almost like exercise. So you wouldn't do intense exercise if, you've been laying in bed for the last 3 weeks, right? You kind of ease your way into it. It's kind of the same thing with fasting. And you have this hormone called ghrelin. It's your hunger hormone. It's released by the stomach, goes up into the hypothalamus and triggers your hunger center. And ghrelin is released with two major triggers. One is a conditioned response. One is nothing in your stomach. Okay. So if your stomach is empty, it's going to release ghrelin. It's going to go up. You're going to have a greater likelihood of having hunger and cravings. The second thing is a conditioned response, meaning if you're used to eating at a certain time every day, especially a good amount of food, you can bet that ghrelin's going to be released at that time. Like you're training your body to say, okay, this is my circadian rhythm for eating. This is when I eat. And so that's why your body starts to do that. So you have to retrain it. And so the way to suppress ghrelin is put something in your stomach. Now it doesn't have to be food. It could be water. It could be herbal tea, right? So you drink some water. Like when we wake up in the morning, all of us are dehydrated because we've been breathing out water vapor all night long. So you're in a state of mild dehydration when you wake up. You should be hydrating. And when you hydrate, that's going to obviously put something in your stomach, extend the stomach wall. And now you're going to get the inhibition of ghrelin. You're not going to have as much hunger. So I tell people, before you even think about eating anything, drink 16 to 24 ounces of water. For most people, like, especially if you're not used to doing that, that's a good amount of water. It might even take you like an hour, 2 hours to be able to consume that much water. Over time, you'll actually get better. You actually crave it. Like when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get that water right into my system. I feel good. It wakes me up. It energizes me. I feel good. It helps us move our bowels, which we should be doing, especially early in the day. We know that the large intestine is most active between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. So you should be having 1 to 2 good bowel movements during that period of time, to help detoxify and cleanse your system. And the water will really help with that process. And so just hydrate your body. And when you feel hungry, drink 4 or 6 ounces of water and then see if the hunger is still there or goes away. If it's still there afterwards, probably a sign that you really need food. If it goes away, it's a sign that you don't, right? And so this is a great trigger. Or you might just say, okay, for me, my schedule, it works better. Like for me personally, I eat typically between 1 and 7 p.m. every day, right? So 1 p.m., right around that time, even if I'm not real hungry, okay, I've usually just worked out. So somewhere between 1 and let's say 2:30, I'm breaking my fast. Even if I don't feel hungry at the time, I just know I've got to get the calories in. So I'm breaking my fast there. But if you're not at that point where you've got a condensed eating window, then just try the hydration method. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just hydrate. You can take a little bit of salts too. Salts themselves can naturally take away cravings. Also the electrolytes, a lot of times, especially when you first start doing this, when you're used to having higher insulin, which most of us are. I mean, when I first started doing this, I mean, I was used to eating 6 meals a day. I had to have a protein shake before I went to bed. I had to have a big breakfast when I woke up in the morning. Thought I needed to do that every single day. And when we first start lowering our insulin levels, see, insulin helps us hold on to electrolytes. It actually causes sodium retention. This is why a lot of times people with insulin resistance who have high insulin, high blood insulin, they develop hypertension because they're holding on to sodium, and sodium brings with it water. So they have higher blood volume, higher blood pressure. When you start going lower carb on a lower carb diet or fasting, your insulin goes down, excuse me, and then your body starts excreting sodium and water, right? So you start urinating it out. So now your blood pressure could get low, too low. You also might feel more dizzy and you might feel nauseous at times. So it's important to actually take a little bit of salts. Just get some good quality sea salt, Himalayan sea salt or Redmond's real salt. Those are pretty good brands. Take a little bit of that, put it on your tongue or put a little bit of that in your water. And that will help you with energy, help reduce cravings. A lot of times cravings can be due to a deficiency in salt or deficiency in electrolytes in general. And that will make a big difference for you.
Yeah, I love that. That's so helpful. Thank you for sharing that. I think that, again, like you said, work slow, work up to it. It doesn't need to happen overnight that you're fasting 18 to 20 hours. And I do think listening to your body is important. And I want to just take a minute to thank you too for being willing to continue to learn. I think that's one of the things that I've learned as a human. It's really hard to admit, A, that we've been wrong. It's hard to unlearn something that we have thought was true for a long period of time. And I think that's really the problem with our medical system is this idea of dogma. Like people just aren't really willing to unlearn what they thought was true. And one of the things for, I think it sounds like for you and for myself, even as a practitioner, I would teach people before my son's diagnosis, you had to eat right when you wake up. And you know what, if you have this issue, this particular symptom, I want you to eat something right before you go to bed. And to unlearn that and to admit like, oh man, I was wrong. Actually, there's research and science that shows differently. And I see that you've done that as well. And so as a physician, as a doctor, as somebody that is as an expert in the field of science, I appreciate that you are willing to do that as well and continue learning.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's a critical principle is always have an open mind. And there's a great quote that says the illiterate of the 21st century are not those who can't read and write, but they're those who can't learn something, realize it's not actually helping them or it's not working, and then unlearn it and relearn a new strategy. That's really the true literate of this century.
That's good. Well, Dr. Jockers, this has been incredible. I've learned a lot. I didn't know about, is it ghrelin? Is that what you said?
Ghrelin, yeah.
Ghrelin. It reminds me of gremlin. It's like a little yeah. gremlin in your stomach. Yeah,
exactly.
But I've learned so much. And I know that our audience will be so blessed by this. So thank you for offering hope and helping just provide information and education behind this idea that is nature's operating table, fasting. It's a really powerful thing. Before we go, I want to ask you to share what has been inspiring you lately? Just something that maybe it's something you're listening to, reading, maybe it's something in life, just something that's been inspiring you.
Well, you know, I would say at this stage in my life, I'm just inspired by spending time with my family for the most part and my children, raising them up. I've got four young kids. And so that's really a great inspiration. And the Bible, I read the Bible every day. And so that's really, really powerful. And then I'm also reading books by other natural health influencers that they're sending as well. What is it that I'm reading right now? I think I just read a book by Dr. Russell Blaylock called Liver Cleanse. That was a good book. Mm-hmm. And then I'm reading a book by Dr. Isaac Elias right now. I don't know if you're familiar with him. I can't remember exactly what it's called. It's in my living room, but very, very interesting book. It talks about this compound called galactin 3 that is a certain lignin that will basically combine on cells and create dysfunctional cells. And it's really, really interesting how his book, Dr. Isaac Elias. So interesting book. So anyways, I'm always reading something that has to do with this field. And then I'm reading the Bible. And, you know, just spending time with my family as much as I can.
I love it. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. This is, like I said, it's been a blessing for me, I'm sure for our audience. And thank you for giving us your time. I know you have a full schedule with four kids, a busy business, and we appreciate you. And we'll make sure to link how you can get a hold of Dr. Jockers. I would say most importantly, follow him on social media. He shares so much information on Instagram. We'll link that below, as well as the link to his books and any other resources that we believe that you should definitely check out. So thank you again. I so appreciate you being on here with us. Hey there, I wanted to just take a moment and thank those of you who have taken the time to not only subscribe to my podcast on whichever platform you choose to listen, but have taken the time to give us a rating. This has helped us reach more people to help them also thrive through cancer. So I wanted to share with you today one of the ratings and reviews that we received from DC Deidre. She said, although I don't have cancer, listening to Season has allowed me to be more aware of my health in ways I didn't know I needed to be. She's taught me how to advocate for myself and ask the right questions. Her guidance is priceless. DC Deidre, you're amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time to not only share this with others, but to remind us of our purpose here, which is to help people be empowered and to help them thrive.